Climate change has taken a little bit of a backseat in this election campaign. While rearing its ugly head every so often, especially when Malcolm Turnbull or Bill Shorten visit marginal electorates in North Queensland, not much concrete detail has come out about the two parties' policies. With the first suspected extinction due to climate change happening earlier this week, and new research showing the majority of people want action on it, the issue may be coming back to the fore. Jacqueline Shivey has more.
A new survey shows 3/4 of people think climate change is an important global issue, and over half think Australia should take action no matter of what happens elsewhere in the world. 40% of the 1,000 respondents from across the country also thought a policy mix is the best way to go. Both of these results were up from an earlier study in 2011, around the time the now dead carbon tax was being debated. Lecturer in finance at the University of Technology, Sydney, Deborah Cotton, says support for the previous carbon scheme was probably clouded by misunderstanding with how it was supposed to work.
I think the policy mix is probably a little bit easier for people to get their heads around, because when you look at other parts of the survey that I did, there's mixed reaction about who should be responsible for dealing with the climate change problem. So, for example, should it be focused on the large emitters? Should it be on all industries? And they tend to sort of say all or none. So I think the carbon tax was a little bit complicated because it really did just target a few sectors of industry rather than all possible emissions.
Both Labor and Liberal have climate change policies, but you'd be forgiven for missing them this election. The Coalition's direct action policy involves a reverse auction where companies bid to win government funding for carbon abatement plans. The scheme contains a cap known as the safeguard mechanism, which is supposed to stop the 140 facilities covered under the policy from exceeding emissions baselines set by the Clean Energy Regulator. The mechanism will come into force on July the 1st, but details on the penalties for non-compliance are scant. Labor is pledging separate emissions trading schemes for the electricity market and the rest of the economy, while the Greens want a strong price on carbon. Deborah Cotton says both major parties haven't put much effort into explaining how their policies will work.
Certainly, it doesn't seem to me that either party has made a big effort in trying to explain it in layman's terms, because in order to understand it, the documents are vast, as you would expect from any kind of policy, but you would expect some kind of clear understanding of it and some clear discussion. And I suppose that was, the final point of what I think about a whole lot of this, is that people are interested and do care, but it doesn't seem to be touching this long election campaign that we've got. It's hardly been an issue at all.
The vagueness is in contrast to the policies of various state governments who have implemented high renewable energy targets in recent years. Victoria became the fourth state yesterday with a commitment to source 40% of its energy from renewables by 2025. Dylan McConnell from the Melbourne Energy Institute estimates this will almost double the amount of clean energy by 2030. Mr. Connell says there are already talks this could hasten the demise of coal power in Australia.
We've seen some comments from analysts at Macquarie Investment today sort of suggesting that this might force the closure of Hazelwood by 2020. So this is sort of the logical extension of what happens to a market when you're sort of forcing in another 5,400 megawatts of wind. Something has to give.
All this comes as the first mammal extinction due to climate change was announced this week. The Bramble K. melimus was known only to live on a small coral cay in the Torres Strait between Queensland and Papua New Guinea. Researcher Dr. Luke Leong from the University of Queensland School of Agriculture and Food Sciences explains the research team made multiple trips to the island to document the melimus declining population.
In 1998, the first survey identified that the island had about just under 100, maybe 93 individuals living. So that's the population size. In 2002 and 2004, two surveys were taken in those 2 years and they found 10 and 12 individuals respectively. So that was a bit of an alarm bell. So I was really keen to go back there, to go to the island and find out, are there still any occurring? Are they persisting? We made a trip In 2011, December, we got to the island. We couldn't find any melon leaves at all. And then, yeah, we went back there in March 2014, and we couldn't find any either. The final trip in August to September 2014, we did intensive, comprehensive survey of the cay, and we couldn't find any individual. So after this intensive survey effort, we are pretty confident that this bramble cane melon leaf has gone extinct.
While the Turnbull government announced $1 billion would come from the Clean Energy Finance Corporation to set up a Great Barrier Reef Protection Fund, Dr. Leong says more strategic long-term climate policy is needed from the government.
In the past few months, the media has been reporting climate change impacts on the Great Barrier Reef, and that was mainly underwater, the bleaching of the coral. And now we also have evidence of the impact happening above water in the Great Barrier Reef. Great Barrier Reef is under tremendous pressure. It's a good step to allocate more funding, but I think this is a longer-term problem. It cannot be resolved just by a short injection of funds. We need to be more strategic about it. We need to understand what the problems are, and we need to manage it. This is our own problem. This is the first recorded extinction of a mammal species caused by climate change. So I think this is an alarm call for Australia and perhaps the world.
Dr. Luke Leong, ending that report by Jacqueline Shivey.